Mr. Rumsfeld, I can understand that you want the extension of the OEO passed, but do you want it passed with these amendments? Is that what the President and you are favoring?
No, indeed. I've stated categorically that I think that the substitute that's been proposed within the last 48 hours is not desirable, and then it's my hope that the two-year extension will be passed without amendments of that nature. The reason for that, and this is the President's position also, the reason for this is that we have an agency that has been designed to be function in a way that would enable it to embark on research, evaluation, the development of new programs, and to force the activities of that agency into a mold that would very closely approximate a state plan or a normal governmental approach, I think is undesirable and unwise.
Mr. Rumsfeld, when you were in the House, you were always identified with the liberal wing of the Republican Party. You're a very good friend of Senator Goodell of New York, who has been critical of just about everything Mr. Nixon does. And now you find yourself being opposed by Congressman Ford, who is the Republican floor leader. Which way do you think the Republican Party is headed in domestic legislation? Is it towards Senator Goodell's idea of things or towards Congressman Ford's?
I would think that trying to read a motion of the Republican Party into any debate on the Economic Opportunity Act really wouldn't be a very good idea for this reason. Historically, this agency has been a very controversial one in the Congress. You can recall that it was created amid a very partisan atmosphere back in 1964, and it's been subject to a great deal of criticism over a period of 5 years. The Republicans in the House, who, of course, I've served with and are good friends of mine, have had a position, a good many of them, of opposition to the agency as it was being operated. It's understandable to me that the members of the House would reflect some of the criticisms we've seen across the country. I understand that. The fact remains that I think that it's desirable for this country to have an agency that has as its concern the problems of the poor. I think it's desirable that that agency, which is not a big agency, it's not a massive war on poverty, as has been said over the years. It's a small office in the executive office of the President. Its budget's $2 billion out of $192 billion. All agencies of government are involved in the problems of the poor, and so too the state and local government. But my point is that I think that this country is big enough and wise enough to allocate some $775 million, which is essentially what's involved in this amendment, for the purpose of seeing if we as a society can make our institutions function as better problem-solving mechanisms. I don't think it's desirable to impose a mold on the activities of this office that's similar to the mold that functions with respect to so many other government programs. I think that we need better ideas. We need better solutions than we have.
Mr. Rumsfeld, there are, of course, people on the Hill that would disagree with your view of what the substitute would do in the economic opportunity field. But before I go into that, I have a sort of a political question. Throughout the campaign, the President, in fact, called OEO a failure, the poverty program. The newspapers have been full of abuses that have been committed in this program. Many congressmen, Republican congressmen as well as Democrats, campaigned against this program last time. I can't understand what made you think that in view of this background that Congress was going to be willing to accept a program identical with what has gone on in the past. How could you come before the Congress and say, give us two more years of the same thing with a little extra money?
Well, I didn't, as a practical matter. The point I made when I testified before both the House and the Senate, and the point the President made while I was still in Congress, before I ever left the Congress to come to the Office of Economic Opportunity, was that there were a variety of changes that he, the President, had made before I came in, such as the delegation of Head Start, the delegation of Job Corps. There were a variety of changes that I've made subsequent to my becoming director. We have completely reorganized the agency. We have redirected and rewritten a great many of the procedures and guidelines, its relationships with states and local governments. We're in the process of fulfilling the President's mandate to see that this agency becomes the innovative arm of the federal government. So there have been a substantial number of changes. There's an additional change that's been put forward. Out of the $2 billion in the Office of Economic Opportunity legislation, the President's proposed the Manpower Training Act, which would take about $900 million and place them in the Department of Labor where they're presently administered, although funded in our act, and then develop a better involvement of the states for those parts of the programs. But he specifically said, and I have specifically said, that the remainder of the funds in the Economic Opportunity Act, roughly the $775 million I'm referring to, should not be placed down to a different level of government but, or handled in a different way.
But most of these things you're saying are regulations that you yourself have instituted that may or may not work under you or someone in the future.
I mean, the streamlining,
the efficiency. Wouldn't you, if you were on the Hill, insist that there be some changes in the law?
Well, that's what I was just saying. There have been changes. The President's proposed the Manpower Training Act. He's already delegated Head Start and the Job Corps prior to my even coming into the agency. There have been changes involving about three substantial changes, some legislative, some not, involving about three-quarters of the agency's activities, about $1.2 billion out of $2 billion.
The controversy, of course, involves the community action. I mean, much of the controversy surrounds the community action agencies. And in that area, there is no change in the law as that you've asked for.
That's
Are you
correct.
Not now willing, in view of this, let's say, a fairly substantial sentiment in the House to consider a substitute to try to rescue the bill?
Well, of course, under our Constitution, the Congress certainly has the prerogative to debate and make changes in legislation. It's my responsibility as director of the agency, I think, to indicate what I believe is in the best interest of this country, in the best interest of this agency. And this is what I've been attempting to do. I think that there's no question but that it's understandable that the Congress is reflecting a reaction in the country. My hope and my concern is that I don't want to see the Congress overreact. I don't want to see an overreaction that would lead to a situation where this country would not be able to deal in an effective way, in an aggressive way, with the problems of the poor.
Well, in hard tax now, Mr. Perkins has got this delayed for a week or two. You have your forces to muster. Presumably, your biggest gun in your artillery is the President of the United States. I come back to my opening two questions. Perhaps I worded them a little loosely, but my question really basically is this. You have a short time left. All the surveys seem to show that the Democrats are behind you, but they need a certain number of Republican votes, and they don't have them. Can you, with the aid of the President, and is he going to do something new, can you muster the Republican votes needed to pass the bill the way you want it?
I don't know. Right now it's close.
Is the President going to do something new?
The situation is that there are 435 members of the House. Only 189 of those are Republicans. The vast majority are Democrats. And we need a substantial number of Democrats and a substantial number of Republicans to prevail. I've been working on the Hill trying to see as many members in both political parties and to persuade them the opportunities that we have with this agency to be sure to correct some of the excesses of the past. Now, I've talked with the President about this. I would imagine this question would come up on Monday evening. There's no question in my mind but that the President fully supports my position. And he's indicated this on four separate occasions. He's made four statements, and he and I are both excited about the prospects that we have in this administration to have in the executive office of the President an agency that can do the important work that he's set forth for
Sir,
us.
I know that, and the Republicans know that. Now, the four are all in the past. They were before these amendments were brought up. At this point, as I understand it, you need a third of the House Republicans behind you. Do you think the President can get them for you or that you can get them for yourself?
As I say, I don't know. I think it'll be close. We have, I think, something approximating a third of the House Republicans who will be supportive. We have members of the Republican leadership who are going to be supportive of the position we've put forward.
Which members of the leadership?
Well, Congressman John Anderson, I believe, and I think Congressman Robert Taft, both are members of the leadership, have indicated that they're in favor of the President's position. That's my understanding at any rate.
In light of your own rhetoric about saying that this is not a massive war on poverty, and in light of the fact that two leading components of OEO, the Job Corps and Head Start, have now gone from your jurisdiction, could you project for us what do you think the future of OEO will be like, say, 5 or 6 years from now? What sort of things will you be doing?
Well, if we look at, I think, the country, at least through my eyes, I see a situation where we have massive federal, state, and local expenditures to deal with the problems of this society. In the case of the federal government, close to $200 billion of dollars. We see a shifting of priorities in this country. We see a reduction of defense expenditures. We see a phasing down of the war in Vietnam, base closings. And we see an increase in domestic expenditures. I'm concerned. I don't believe that as we shift priorities, and indeed they are shifting, as this happens, I don't believe it would be desirable for this country to simply put more money into the existing federal programs we have. I don't believe that those faucets are working perfectly. I think some of them are rusted and they have barnacles. And I don't think that the institutions of this country are functioning in a perfect problem-solving way. And the charter that the president gave the Office of Economic Opportunity, and what, if we are successful, will be the case, is that we will see this office embarking on things that are difficult, that are experimental, that are of a research nature, of a program development nature. To the extent they're successful, we'll try to develop them and expand them. To the extent they're not successful, I hope we have the courage to say they're not successful and stop them. But
let me break you right here for just a moment. We'll interrupt at this point. We'll be back to you in a moment.
The Sealy, a posturpedic emissary, exalted one.
You brought the famous Sealy posturpedic mattress?
Right here, Your Highness. America's number one firm mattress.
Kindly reveal posturpedic's secret.
Posturpedic is designed in cooperation with leading orthopedic surgeons for firm support.
Comfortable.
Posturpedic promises no morning backache from sleeping on a too-soft mattress.
Excellent. I'll take it.
King size, queen size, or regular?
One king, 41 queens.
One king, 41 queens? One king, 41 queens?
Posturpedic, made only by Sealy.
Mr. Rumsfeld, I interrupted you in midstream. I apologize for it. I'd like you to go on. I'd also like, if you will, for you to discuss the problem of legal services under OEO.
Yes, indeed. My thought was this, that we have an agency that's very little understood. What it is, essentially, is this. It's 49 health centers, neighborhood health centers, that are providing the delivery of health services in a very different way. Family planning services across the country, migrants, Indian activities, community action agencies, and also some 1,850 legal services lawyers. Were the legal services program, for example, to be placed under a state plan approach, I think it's likely that we would have great portions of this country where the poor would not have access to the legal system, the kind of access that the support and counsel of legal services lawyers provides. And I believe that providing the poor of this country access to the legal system is exceedingly important. It certainly is the most legal, the most reasonable, the most peaceful way to redress grievances in this society that exists.
In view of the fact that you've said that these amendments, putting it under state control and so forth, would make administering of the program an absolute nightmare, if these amendments, the Queen Green amendments, pass, will you stay on as director of OEO?
Well, I would think that we've got the conference, we've got the House action before us, we've got the House-Senate conference. I can't believe the Senate would be agreeable to some of these changes. For example, with respect to the VISTA program, the effect of these amendments, as I understand it, and I must say it's difficult to speak precisely about the substitute because it's only been very recently made available. There have been no hearings on it. There's not been an opportunity to study it in complete depth, but the effect on the VISTA program would amount to abolishing it. For example, there's 6,000 VISTA volunteers around the country. If it were operated on a state plan, that would mean you'd have about 120 per state. Well, there's obviously no state that could conduct national recruiting for VISTA or national training. It would be a very different operation.
Well, on a hypothetical basis, if this should come about, how do you feel about staying on?
I would think that what would be done is, if something like this were passed and it proved when finally finished through the Congress, it proved to be impossible to administer, that the next course of action would be to come up in January with legislation that would correct the defects, because certainly that's the way our system works between the executive and the legislative branch.
I cannot, after reading the Hill testimony back in June and the debate recently on the floor, understand why you feel that the provisions of the substitute are as destructive as you seem to think. According to their sponsors, it's now in the law that a state can declare itself the community action agency and take over the program with the escape valve. The local communities can opt out. That isn't really changed. And they say that there are six separate controls under their substitute that you would have over the program, which if you were dissatisfied with the state program, you could either close it down or you could still take it over and administer it directly from Washington. Is it really as destructive as you're saying?
Well, of course, what I've said is that insofar as I'm able to assess the substitute at this point, I feel it would be very undesirable. The president made a speech called New Federalism, and he talked about four things. He talked about the new family assistance program, which would revamp the welfare system. He talked about manpower training. He talked about revenue sharing, and he talked about the reorganization and the new charter for the Office of Economic Opportunity. In two of those instances, revenue sharing and manpower, he said that we want to have shared responsibility with the states, and we're going to move the responsibility toward the state in those instances. In the other two, in the family assistance system and in the Office of Economic Opportunity, he said that there's an important federal role. For example, in the family assistance, he said there's going to be a national minimum. And he said that the federal government would assume a greater part of the role of financing the welfare programs. And with respect to the Office of Economic Opportunity, he said something essentially the same. He said that there's a need in this country for an office, a federal office, that has as its role the development of better ways of delivering services to the people of this country, better ways of improving economic opportunity, better ways of helping individuals improve their capabilities to take advantage of economic opportunities. There's nothing wrong in the world with having the states involved in many of these programs. And they are in the manpower program and in a variety of others. My point is that I don't think it's healthy for society to take all of the activities of the society and put them into the same mold. And this is, in effect, what this approach would seem to me to do. Therefore, I must concede there are parts of that substitute that are perfectly acceptable. We're already doing, administratively, some of the things that are in that substitute.
Well, Mr. Rumsfeld, aren't you also concerned, as some members of the Congress are, about this so-called poverty industry that has grown up? Some of these things seem to be almost the cries of pain of a bureaucracy rather than of an agency that just wants freedom to innovate and make test programs.
Well, I am concerned, and I've indicated publicly my concern about this problem. I indicated as a member of the Space Committee when I saw what was happening in the space field. I discussed it when I was in the Congress concerning the defense industry. And it's inevitable. It happens. And it's something that our society has to be very alert to avoid to the extent we're able. There's no question but that there are a limited number of people in this country who have experience in space, who have experience in activities the nature of which the Office of Economic Opportunity is involved in. I've been attempting to improve the situation, to rewrite the guidelines, and I think we've done a very effective job.
On May 26, when you were sworn in at the White House, Mr. Nixon said that your first role would be as an assistant to him in regards to the problems of poor people, and only secondarily as director of OEO and as a member of the cabinet. Yet, if you were a poor person in the ghetto somewhere, you would look on television and you would see Jerry Ford coming out of the White House briefing every week and talking one way, and why should he believe you? I'm asking particularly in light of the fact that the Catholic bishops of New York read at every mass in New York State today a letter talking about the growing bitterness and resentment towards the poor, which they said was caused by some of this legislation. So why should any poor person believe you when so many other figures are talking another way?
Well, I guess I don't know the letter you're referring to, the growing bitterness of the poor or toward the poor.
Bitterness and resentment of their presence among us was the way the letter
in other words, just
because
it's a comment on the fact that the society today
recent legislation that has increased the hardship of many poor people. This is both on the state level, and New York is regarded as a more liberal state than others.
Well, I don't know if you're referring to federal or state legislation, but the fact of the matter is that in the 9 months this administration's been in office, it's put forward a host of proposals that are still pending before the Congress concerning the welfare system, food and hunger, and manpower training, and the Office of Economic Opportunity, and I think that it is regrettable that the Congress has not acted on this legislation.
Yet they're about to cripple
the cold, hard fact is that this is December. The fiscal year started 5.5 months ago. The Office of Economic Opportunity still doesn't have its funds for the fiscal year that began 5.5 months ago. This is no way to run government. We've passed, I think, 4 appropriation bills in the Congress thus far. This means that not only can you not plan, but it's half through the fiscal year before you'll even know what you'll be getting.
But, Mr. Rumsfeld, wasn't it the supporters of OEO that, in fact, delayed this program to this point? That is, that they were looking for votes. They didn't have votes till now. Now, at the very end of the session, they've tried to push this through, and they've been blocked. It happens all the time on the Hill.
Well, it shouldn't happen, and I don't know that what you're saying is exactly correct. The fact of the matter is that it's happened with a whole list of pieces of legislation that are still before the Congress that have not been acted on.
Well, on poverty, let me take you beyond Congress. I don't think it's fair always to belabor Congress as the villain. Do you think that the American people really are willing to support a massive effort to help the poor? For example, at the recent White House Hunger Conference, the resolution was passed to seek $5,500 a year minimum for a poor family of 4. Now, the calculations I've seen mean that this would amount to anywhere from $70 to $100 billion a year. Now, do you think the American taxpayer, to say nothing of the Congress, do you think the American mediumly wealthy, the American... the American taxpayer is willing to support
us.
This kind of increase? Us, is you, me, everybody, people who own television sets. The American taxpayer is willing to support, whether Congress will or not, that much of an increase?
Well, of course, that isn't the recommendation that the president's made. The president's made a recommendation in the family assistance system to increase the coverage
to a vast number
of individuals. And my point, I have a lot of confidence in the American people. I really do. I think that when a subject is intelligently discussed and they understand that the Office of Economic Opportunity is not for the poor. The Office of Economic Opportunity is for this country, and to the extent we're able to do a good job in dealing with the problems of the poor, we've made this a better society. And we can't have a country where there's a separation and a division between people and people feel separated from society.
And yet the relief rolls climbed 10% in the last year.
And this, of course, is a testimony to the present welfare system, which is clearly a disaster. Everyone agrees with this. And this is why the President of the United States said, I'm not going to walk one more step down that road.
How about your
own? This is the reason he's put before the Congress a very new and exciting and very bold program to completely revamp the present system.
Your own budget preparations. Now, you have to prepare a budget that involves community action program, legal services, VISTA, and the rest. Is that going to be considerably higher or at the same level as last year?
Well, of course, we're operating in the blind. The fiscal year is half over. We've already started the 1971 budget cycle, as President Nixon recently indicated. It may be that the administration will not be able to come forward with a 71 budget because we don't have the vaguest idea from the Congress what we're going to be operating on during the year that's now half over.
Well, you must have some guidance from people in the White House and the Budget Bureau.
As I say, we're going through the Budget Bureau process right now.
And are they
And we've requested an increase.
Generous? How do you
Well, I think it's rather clear that it's a very difficult thing to build a budget for a year to follow on when you have not really been given any idea of what you're going to be able to have during the preceding year. Just in developing a budget proposal, it's practically impossible to do it.
With the minute or so that we have left, could you put on your presidential counsel hat again and tell us, what's the problem getting a new draft director? Do we have one yet? And have people turned it down? What's going on?
Well, it's not an area that I've been personally directly involved in. I will say that I was, as from my experience in Congress, having worked to try and bring about changes in the draft system, I'm disappointed that the Congress has not moved further along the line that the President's proposed. I'm pleased that we've been able to make some changes. I would guess that there would be a decision on a new director of the Selective Service in a very reasonable period of time.
You're still for the volunteer army despite the huge cost?
I am indeed, and the cost would not be huge. The cost, the money difference is what we're presently taxing people by their service in the military. I think that this country is perfectly capable of paying people what they would be able to make in the civilian competitive manpower market for military service.
Thank you very much, Mr. Rumsfeld, for being with us here today on Face the Nation.
Today on Face the Nation, the director of the Office of Economic Opportunity, Donald Rumsfeld, was interviewed by CBS News correspondent David Shoemaker. Martin Nolan of the Washington Bureau of the Boston Globe and CBS News correspondent George Herman.